Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's new book, Paperboy. To order today, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on store.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria studio, it's the Grace Curley Show.
We got to bring in a new voice, a young voice, a rising voice, Grace Curley.
You can read Grace's work in the Boston Herald and the Spectator.
Especially Grace. Grace, stand up.
Here's the millennial with the mic, Grace Curley.
Welcome back, everyone. I want to talk about Karen Reed, and I also want to play some Jonathan Turley cuts breaking down this Trump hush money trial in New York City, which I don't believe he's in court today.
No, it was Monday, Wednesday, and Friday this week.
He has today off, and I think he's holding a rally as well.
In Wisconsin today.
Yeah, so I think he'll be just fine, but I wanted to play this because Turley thinks that the judge in this case has already made a major mistake that could basically get the case appealed at least, but maybe tossed. We'll talk about that in a second, and like I mentioned, we will talk about Karen Reed because I found the back and forth between the people, the paramedics that were on the scene after John O'Keefe was allegedly run over. I found that very interesting. And, you know, if they can even plant a seed of doubt in the jurors' minds that Karen Reed maybe didn't do this, that's all they need to do. And when you listen to these paramedics and how their stories have changed and how their stories contradict a lot of the dash cam footage and also their previous testimony, you think to yourself, how would she not get off? Like, how did it even get this far? But before I talk about that, I just want to wrap up one thing here on the college campus front. This administration, I don't often give them credit, Jared, but they have a stunning knack for having the worst instincts. I want to say political instincts, but it's just instincts in general that I've ever seen. Whenever there's a problem and you think, what could we do to make this worse? That's always the road they choose. Or, you know, what shouldn't we do? That's always the thing they're going to choose. It's George Costanza. You know, if every instinct you have is wrong, then the opposite of that must be right. Every instinct they have is wrong. For example, you have masked up hammer wielding crazies taking over college campuses, chanting about killing Jews, burning down Tel Aviv, not getting enough food delivered to the building that they've occupied, holding janitors hostage, all of these things that are making the average voter kind of scratch their heads and say, what are these schools teaching these young people? Why are these universities creating environments that seem so ripe for this kind of radical mob rule? And what does Biden decide to do? The very day where people are going, he really should take a break from his nap schedule and denounce this and come out and actually be a leader for once in his life. What does he decide to do? This is Joe Biden. This quote from Joe Biden. Today, my administration is approving $6.1 billion in student debt cancellation for 317,000 borrowers who attended the art institutes. That is what they think the minds like KJP and Anita Dunn, and I'm sure Ron Klain still has, you know, a say in all this. This is what they think is the best move. When people are watching this with utter disgust for what is happening in 2024 in the United States of America, this is what they decide to do, is say, not only are these nuts overrunning these schools, bullying these Jewish students, waving pro-Hamas flags, but we want to remind you that you are paying for a lot of their student loans. You will be picking up the tab so that they can major in I Hate Jews at Columbia or NYU or a City College. They want to make sure you know that not only are you witnessing this madness, but you're paying for it. And they think that's a good idea. They think that sits well with the audience.
I want a list of people whose loans are forgiven in this instance, because I bet that list coincides with the employee database of the Biden White House or the White House staff or congressional staffers. I bet these are people getting their, who work for the government, getting their loans paid off.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And nobody else. They're getting it because they're, you know, it's the same way they're trying to protect the hack jobs in case Trump gets back in, that you can't fire hacks. It's the same thing. Everybody that's getting their loans forgiven now works for the government somehow, I'm sure.
You know how you can, like, sponsor a highway? I feel like you should be able to, if we're all going to pay for these student loans, and I have student loans, by the way. I don't have a lot of them at this point. I've been paying them off for a while. But I think if we're all going to be paying, if it's our tax money that's going to go towards these student loans, we should be able to choose which majors we want to contribute our tax dollars to. Like, oh, you majored in, what's one that I would be down for? I don't know. It's like slim pickings. But I'll tell you what I wouldn't be down for. Are these majors like gender, sexuality, decolonization, critical race studies? I wouldn't want my tax money going to that. Somebody else pick up that tab. And there's plenty of liberal people with plenty of money who would be happy to have their student loan cancellation contribution go to those studies. But I'm not in that camp.
I think at the very least, I should get in the mail, like, you probably don't remember this, but in the 80s, it was big for UNICEF. You could send money.
Yeah.
You could sponsor a kid in Africa. You'd get, like, I think my brother did that. You'd get back a picture of the kid and a bio. His name was Addison something or other. But yeah, we get that, you know, for it's like, oh, you paid off they, them, Jennifer, whatever. And this is what they, them are up to now. You know, it kind of like a pen pal situation. So you can kind of keep tabs on your investment,
well,
if you will.
I want to read you this from David Harsanyi. He says, I assure you, no bank in the world would ever lend any young person tens of thousands of dollars, much less hundreds of thousands, to pursue studies in either black, critical race, Islamic, gender, sexuality, decolonization studies, if those loans were not backed by the federal government. The state guarantee policy has created a massive moral hazard that allows schools not only to ignore the real world needs of their students, but to charge astronomical tuition rates. If Ivy League schools believe that those political science and journalism degrees are going to pay off in careers, then they should co-sign on the loans instead of taxpayers. Yeah, like if you guys are offering this beautiful, brilliant education, you're what do they always say? Like, we're sculpting the students that are going to go on to be great leaders that we all wish to see in the world, and they're going to forge a path to make a difference. I've read the mission statements. If you're doing that and you're so confident in the job that you're doing, then you should bet on these students. You know, you should invest. You should bet on the fact that they're going to make good on all of the wonderful education you're giving them. The student loan racket game, however, solidified silos of extremism and buffoonery, with decades of compounding radicalism and DEI racism smothering genuine intellectual diversity. Now Democrats want to go from backing this racket to decreeing that taxpayers should just pay off all these bad choices. Of course, the United States is such a hellhole of capitalist imperialism that 13,838 students out of 36,000 at Columbia University are here on foreign visas. Harsanyi writes, I planned on arguing that this policy was unfair to high-achieving American students until I realized that 13,838 Americans have been spared Columbia. By the way, KJP, Columbia grad. Just wanted to point that out. Society would be better served lighting up a giant cash bonfire than subsidizing this corrosive trend. But we are, and Joe Biden's so proud of it that he puts out a tweet, $6.1 billion. So here are his bright ideas for the day. Here are the trial. That's not even a trial balloon. That's just him announcing it. Like, hey, by the way, thanks so much for opening up your wallet to all these radical nuts on campuses. But that's one thing for today. Is I transferred $6.1 billion of student loan debt to people who didn't take out degrees and all of these things. And the other one is, we might bring in Palestinian refugees. What could possibly go wrong? You know, I'm not so convinced that think tank at UPenn isn't still up and running. Is the Biden think tank coming up with these, cranking these ideas out and just, you know, funneling them to the White House? Because they have more terrible ideas than any administration ever. And Trump keeps going on the campaign trail and saying, you know, Jimmy Carter's so happy that Biden came along because he's officially not the worst president now. I don't even think it's close. Because again, it's the intent versus the impact. You can say that Jimmy Carter had a bad impact, but I don't think anyone questioned his intent. The intent with this administration full of buffoons and radicals is to destroy the country. And I can't really answer where it goes beyond that, like the end game, but that's the intent. And so I agree with Trump. I don't think it's even close. I think Biden takes the cake.
Well, it's kind of what you brought up earlier about how they have the worst instincts of on everything. It's like, so not only are they they're corrupt, they're evil, they're inept at all of it. So
they're
it's arrogant. It's the triumvirate of just horridness.
Yeah.
Like, they're evil, they're corrupt, but they're bad at that. And, I mean, they're only succeeding in destroying the country because, really, that's a pretty simple, like, you can't screw that up when they take these actions.
Yeah, it's disturbing, and I think Joe Biden, they're so proud of it. Like, they're so proud of what they've accomplished so far. And I mentioned this earlier, but then Kamala Harris puts out a tweet today, trust women. It's like, what is that? That's the tweet, trust women? By the way, I'm a woman, and I don't really go for that. Trust women. Like, trust all women? Like, believe all women? Why should we trust all women?
I trust Tara Reid. Does that count?
I don't trust Kefia Karen, Johanna King Slutsky, political strategist extraordinaire, and Marxist, romanticist, transatlantic major at Columbia PhD. I don't trust her. Does that make me a bad woman? Does that make me a bad person? I'm supposed to trust women? By the way, I don't think Kamala Harris trusts women who say, I don't really want to compete against men in sports. I don't want to go up against a biological male on the basketball court. She doesn't trust those women. Does she? I don't think so. There's a lot of women out there who I don't think Democrats trust. 844-500-4242. When we come back, we are going to play some more sound for you. We're going to talk about Karen Reed. We're going to talk about Jonathan Turley. There's so much more to get to today. But first, I wanted all of you to listen up because you've waded through the cold temps in February and the rainy weather in March. The warm weather's here, but Jared, that can mean you go outside, you're so excited, you're like, oh, it's going to be a beautiful day. Then you get to your windshield and you see that dreaded yellow pollen and you think, I'm going to be sniffling all day long.
Yeah, I'm looking out the window now. It looks great. There's that nice new bright green. There's some what looks like yellowish, pinkish going on. There's a little bit of red. It's nice. The green's coming back, but like Taylor behind me, you start the coughing, you start the wheezing. You don't want that. I don't want that at all, but I don't have to worry about that because I have the thunderstorm, and I like to keep it in my car because this time of year, I like to roll the windows down, but that's when the pollen gets in. But I just plug in the thunderstorm because each unit has its own USB cord. You plug into the unit, plug it into the USB port of your car, you turn it on, you get that ionized air in your car, which eliminates the allergens and the pollutants in the air. The same way it eliminates odors.
Yeah, and you want to go to EdenPureDeals.com to get this fabulous deal. And to get the 3-pack, you want to enter code GRACE3. So it's EdenPureDeals.com. You want to get the 3-pack. This is an awesome deal. You can use one in your car, your basement, maybe one in your kitchen to eliminate any cooking odors. And you want to make sure you use the code GRACE3 so you get the awesome deal on the 3-pack. We will be right back with more. This is The Grace Curley Show.
The Grace Curley Show will be right back. This is The Grace Curley Show.
Welcome back, everyone, to The Grace Curley Show. Let's do the poll question here. It's brought to you by Local Silver Mint, located in Ware, New Hampshire. Silver Dave will work with you directly, so contact him at localsilvermint.com. Jared, what is the poll question, and what are the results thus far?
Today's poll question, which you can vote in at gracecurlyshow.com, is who's more responsible for the campus protests, students or professional outside agitators?
We probably should have made professors an option. But out of those two, I'm going to give it to the students. I think they're putting in a lot of effort here to appear as insane as possible. And I don't think it's fair to give the credit to the outside agitators.
Well, 80% of the audience disagrees with you. They say professional outside agitators are most responsible for the protests, 20% for the students. And now Fordham University in New York is getting in on the action.
Yeah.
A little late to the party, but, you know, fashionably late, I think.
Yeah, they put out a deadline. These deadlines mean nothing. I don't even understand. This is as effective as Joe Biden's foreign policy strategy of don't, and see how well that worked out for us. Or minor incursion with Russia and Ukraine. Michael, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Michael.
Hi, Grace. Yeah, I'm a never Trump Republican. In regards to the Democrats, I don't agree with the majority of Biden's policies, but to say that they want to destroy the country is false and reckless and highly irresponsible on your part. There's a lot of idiots and morons that listen to shows like yours, and they're influenced by when you say ridiculous things like that.
What's so ridiculous about it? What's your explanation? Why do we have an open border? Why are we now going to welcome in Palestinian refugees? That's the latest Biden administration idea. Why are we canceling $6 billion of student loan debt from art institutes and transferring that to taxpayers? What's the other? I'm open to other ideas. What is the game plan here?
Sure, I'll address that. In regards to open borders, one, they're not open, but I don't want to debate that. Because they have bleeding hearts and they're naive.
Wait, don't you want to debate?
They have bleeding hearts.
Why don't you want to debate the open borders? The numbers are astronomical. People are walking in. People are actually flying in. They don't even have to walk through the border. They can just get flights into the country.
Fine. It's an open border. Everyone and anyone can come here. With that said, it's not because they're trying to destroy America. They have bleeding hearts. They're naive. They think they can help people. They don't want to destroy the country. It's utterly ridiculous.
You know what,
the
Michael?
They're so irresponsible.
Oh, well, forgive.
Says the guy who called the people listening to the show idiots and morons.
Yeah, I'm confused. I'm naive. So you have all of these Democrats who are supportive of bringing, and by the way, they're supportive of bringing people in until you actually send them to their cities or their islands like Martha's Vineyard. And then they're not as, you know what's the weird thing? They're not as much bleeding hearts when it's in their backyard, not as compassionate when the illegal aliens show up on their home turf, very compassionate about sending them to, for example, to Texas or sending them to those border towns, not as compassionate when it actually involves putting a little skin in the game. I would argue, Michael, that if anyone sounds naive here, it might actually be you.
I know your audience wants to be lied to, but at some point, do you
what's
kind
the
of
lie?
Get nauseous when you look at yourself?
Oh, I don't get nauseous when I look at myself. I can tell you that right now. But what's the lie?
I don't even know where to begin.
You know what I don't appreciate, Michael, is like I'm totally on board with arguing about ideas or arguing about, you know, if there's a problem with a fact that I told you that you want to push back on. But I notice that it goes right to emotional manipulation. Like you right away start calling my audience morons. You start, you know, labeling me as I should be nauseous when I look at myself. It's this whole idea of like I'm a bad person and you're a good person, which I just find intellectually dishonest. Like, you're not actually here to debate anything. You're just here to make me feel bad or to call me names.
All right, I'll debate something with you. I've heard you say on numerous occasions that, well, Trump wouldn't be a dictator because he didn't do that the first time. The only thing that prevented him the first time was he was, quote-unquote, dumb enough to have, unquote, to have adults in his administration that prevented him from doing that.
You think,
have you read Project 2020?
Hold on a second. This is what I don't understand. How come you can go on and on? You ask these questions or you put out these statements and I can't have a rebuttal. Last time I checked, it's my show. Yeah, I'm just confused as to what kind of dictator is in power for 4 years and then decides to run again. He's not president, Michael. I'm not sure if you know this. He's not president. I know for the Never Trumpers, he's still number one in your hearts, but he's not currently the president of the United States. And this whole idea that once he gets into power, he's going to jail the free press and he's going to put people in prison, he's going to take over, I just don't buy it. He just did a sit-down interview with Time Magazine, 84 minutes. You know how long the Joe Biden interview was with Time Magazine? 0 minutes. I mean, this is the dictator. He's not a very good one, Michael. We'll be right back. All you morons and idiots, don't go anywhere.
Live from the Aviva Trattoria Studio.
Jared, nothing says civil discourse like starting out. I know your audience is a bunch of morons.
Yeah.
But do you get nauseous when you look at yourself? Like, depending on what kind of hair day I'm having, yes and no. But not because of my political beliefs. I can assure you of that. I love when we get these wacky callers because he says it's irresponsible for you to say that Democrats are purposely ruining the country. Why? Because they're compassionate, huh? These aren't things you can back up with facts. These are just your feelings. You feel as though they're compassionate. I don't really think there's anything compassionate about letting people over the border, encouraging people to surge the border, encouraging coyotes and smugglers to take money from people to bring their kids over the border and drop them off of border walls. I don't think there's to drown in the Rio Grande. I don't think there's anything compassionate about that. But maybe I don't have as big a heart as Michael. Maybe that's the problem. And I've got to address that, Jared. And I'm going to start doing that. Every day when I wake up in the mirror, I'm going to say, what would Michael do? What would Michael do? Because I'm looking at you, Grace, and it's making me sick. It's making me sick to my stomach.
And even if we follow the logic that they're not trying to destroy the country, they're still doing it.
Yeah, fine.
Is it better that they're unintentionally destroying the country?
But for some reason, commenting on the fact that my theory is they're trying to destroy it is dangerous. How about we focus on the danger of the fact that they're doing it in the first place? If you want to do Occam's razor and say, no, the simpler explanation is that they're compassionate and that's why they're destroying the country. Guess what, Michael? We're in the same exact spot we were before. And I don't like that spot.
And as always, Grace and I, we are fair game, whatever. But you can't call our audience morons and idiots. That is unacceptable, sir.
They're boomer rubes.
Thank you.
Okay, that's what we
call unacceptable, sir.
I do love this dictator thing. Please go read. Michael is a great reason that you guys should go read my latest at Spectator. I love this argument that Trump is some sort of tin pot dictator. Like, again, what a terrible dictator. That's the best he could do was 4 years. I mean, at least go for 8. And no, it's only because he hired people who kept him in check. Oh,
yeah, who are those adults?
Yeah, tell me the people that you like, Never Trump or Michael. Who are the people that have your strange new respect because of the way they handled Donald Trump? Oh, because of the peaceful protest? Oh, and then, I get it now. We're going to get lectured on January 6th. Anything to say about the current insurrections going on? We've had almost 100 insurrections since that day that I don't hear anything about from the far left nuts. I almost am starting to wonder, this would be a good poll question. Who's worse, Never Trumpers or Democrats? I think Never Trumpers.
But again, you repeat yourself.
I think Never Trumpers, though, Jared, like Rhino Never Trumpers, like the Bill Kristols of the world, the Rick Wilsons of the world, the Michaels of the world. I think they're actually worse than Democrats because they're so sanctimonious. And they're just as useless to me as Democrats, but they bug me even more. Ron, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Ron.
Hi, Grace and Michael. That was some gaslighting level 11. By the way, my pronouns are moron and idiot. And so, at any rate, you know, he's not a Never Trump Republican. He's a flat-out leftist. And if you want to know the ways that the Democrats are destroying America, we could talk about, you know, the origin of COVID and Peter Daszak and Fauci thinking that it's okay to kill 20 million Americans to steal an election. And also we can talk about how we have perpetual inflation caused by the Democrat COVID unnecessary lockdowns as well. I mean, I could go on and on. There's so much. It's so blatant. It's intentional. These people are, they are just intentionally inept. We got Joe Biden is a dictator. He is Fidel Biden. And that's what I got for right now. But maybe I'll run into Michael and I'll have more for him.
You know, I wouldn't say Joe Biden's a dictator in the same way I wouldn't say Donald Trump's a dictator. They're just presidents. Joe Biden happens to be a really bad president. And something I want to mention here is this, like, sugarcoating everything in this idea that the left just cares more, so that somehow makes the things they do less egregious. Like, they're just nicer about it. I don't really care. I don't really care how nice the president is. And by the way, Joe Biden's not nice. Like, he has a very long history of being a complete jerk. But if he was good at his job, I wouldn't care about that either. Like, I wouldn't care if Joe Biden's an empathizer in chief. I wouldn't care that he's smug and that he talks about nude photos with salacious. Like, none of that stuff would even cross my mind. And then he tells old stories and then he lies about his uncle being eaten by cannibals. I wouldn't care about that if he was efficient, but he's not. I wouldn't care about that if inflation wasn't through the roof, but it is. I wouldn't care that he's a smug bastard if the border was closed. But alas, we have an open border. Like, these are the things that matter. And I won't say that Dr. Fauci, as far as the 20 million, like, I don't think that he knew things were going to get... you can go into the funding of the COVID lab and the origin of COVID, and they're actually having investigations on that. I don't think we know enough about it. So I don't want to agree with that either, because I think there needs to be more investigations into Fauci and into Peter Daszak. And I think he's having his hearing today. And we need to find out more before we throw around any accusations. Otherwise, we're just as bad as the left. Peter, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, Peter.
Hello. I'd like to start by saying I love how you deal with the morons. And I wish you could have more of them on the show, because it really makes me laugh.
Thank you. Thank you,
Peter. But what I called about was Manchester, New Hampshire. I have dozens of Jewish friends there. Half of them are carrying babies, and all of them are carrying a pistol and a holster, open carry. And I think that's why you haven't seen any Palestinian riots there.
Yeah, you know what? It's interesting. My parents, they were telling me about a neighbor of theirs. He's a younger guy. He's Jewish. And he actually just got his license to carry as well, because he said he never thought he'd see the day. And you know what's funny is he's in his 30s. He will never forget this time period. Like, you can look at this and go, oh, it's college kids, and oh, it's gonna, they'll bring in the cops, and these kids should be expelled, and as if that's gonna be the end of it. For that person, my parents' neighbor, he's not gonna forget this. He's gonna remember this time forever now, because he probably always heard that it could happen, here, and that it could happen again. And that anti-Semitism is very pervasive, and it's happened throughout the centuries. And he probably thought, it's not going to happen in my lifetime. And now he's not going to forget it. And just like you said, he's got his license to carry. He's going to protect his family. And he's not going to go back to that level of naivete.
Just as a side note, Trump has started the Wisconsin rally early, something that's completely foreign to Joe Biden. He's signing Uncle Sam hats that are getting thrown on stage and tossing them back. Just the visual.
Yeah, and
is
that's
amazing.
That's the other funny part about Trump, is that he does love.
He's laughing and smiling. Yeah, he's having a good time.
He loves to float this idea, because I think he knows that for people like Michael. So Michael's a troll, right? But I think Trump, he's good at trolling too. He knows that if he floats this idea of dictatorship or anything like that, or jailing journalists, that's going to cause these meltdowns, and it's going to cause people who already have him living rent-free in their head to go completely apoplectic. But the reason that I don't think that's going to happen is because Trump loves the free press. He loves these journalists. He loves Democrats. He loves fighting with them and debating them and going back and forth with them and truthing them. This is a guy who wants to have these beefs. He sat for an 84-minute interview with Time Magazine. Do you think if Grace Curley were his political strategist, a la Johanna King Slutsky, that I would tell him that a good strategy would be to sit down with Time Magazine, a magazine that openly hates him? No, I would say stop doing these interviews with journalists who hate your guts. But it's not going to work. It's not going to work because he wants to do it. He loves the free press and they love him. It's a relationship. It's mutually beneficial. Their ratings go up. People start reading them again. He gets all of this, you know, coverage, all of this airtime. Don't be so, I keep using this word, but don't be so naive that you think this is a guy who doesn't love the attention. He's actually one of the only people who I think follows the model, all press is good press. Like every knock a boost. A lot of people say that, but then when it actually happens to them and they get bad press and they get called Hitler or they get called a racist, like that's, for example, Grace Curley. If I saw a headline in the Daily Mail about me, oh, Grace Curley, racist, whatever, I'd have a pit in my stomach. I would not like that. I'd go, oh, God. I don't think all press is good press. Donald Trump actually believes that. He wants to be everywhere all the time. 844-500-4242. If he was going to be a dictator, I don't think he'd be sitting down with Time Magazine. I also don't think he'd be running for president. I think he'd still be in office. James, you're up next on the Grace Curley Show. Go ahead, James.
Hello, Grace. Thanks for taking my call. Okay, so my point that I'd like to make is that both you and Michael are correct. You're both right. You're right that the plan, the trying to ruin the country, that's the decision makers. That's the policy makers. They absolutely are. And we all see it for what it is. But Michael's right because he's one of those people out there in suburbia or whatever who believe what the narrative, the propaganda that they're getting from their news TV, and they're the ones that are, you know, the virtue signaling, I'm such a good person, everyone should be able to come here. That's Michael. And so they're actually the naive ones that believe the story they're being told for why the actual, well, you know, what are these policies all about? They're being sold a bill of goods, whereas the people making the decisions know exactly what they're doing and why they're doing it, but they're not telling them that.
You know what, James? You're right. And that actually makes me feel sorry for Michael. And now I've turned a corner. To quote Tucker Carlson, my scorn has turned to pity. I pity the fool. And if he wants to buy this BS that, you know, he's a nicer person than I am because he has some sign on his lawn saying hate has no home here, go for it. If that helps you sleep at night, Michael, I'm on board. Two thumbs up. All right, thank you for the call, James. Very good point. When we come back, we're going to talk to Howie Carr. We've got so much to discuss, but I did say that I was going to read a little bit from Karen Reed and this murder trial. I just want to give you a couple lines here that stuck out to me from the Boston Herald. The paramedic who said he heard Karen Reed yell, "I hit him, I hit him, I hit him," as she paced frantically around the body of her boyfriend, testified along with other first responders. So the first paramedic that they talk about here is Timothy Natal. And it was Natal who told investigators that he heard Reed say, "I hit him," repeatedly while pacing around her boyfriend's body as it was stiff and cold in the heavy snow in the front yard of 34 Fairview Road. Now, the heavy snow, even right there, there's people questioning that. Now, he remembered O'Keefe having an appropriate winter coat for the weather removed from him in the ambulance. Jackson presented photographs of the item O'Keefe was actually wearing, and that's Jackson's defense attorney, which was a hooded sweatshirt and not a winter coat. So this is what Jackson says. So your memory is as good about what Reed said as it was with the winter coat. Paramedic responds, yes. Paramedic had described O'Keefe as having black eyes and a hematoma, which the paramedic described as a pretty good egg at the right eye. It's the same wound that got O'Keefe's brother Paul O'Keefe to choke up when describing it on the stand on Monday. You would agree that a very common way for a hematoma to develop around someone's eye is from being punched, the lawyer said. Correct, the paramedic said. Now, the senior paramedic in the group, Flamati, he also chimed in, and another person to take the stand was Canton Police Officer Steven Seraph, who was the first on the scene. He testified that Reed said hysterically, "This is all my fault. This is all my fault. I did this." Now, when the lawyer, Alan Jackson, questioned his story, saying that it had changed since his initial report from the actual day, he established that Seraf hadn't said that Reed, he hadn't said that Reed, quote, until his grand jury testimony months after the fact on April 2022. Seraf attributed his differing accounts to an oversight. So this is what the lawyer said. An oversight that a woman you met standing over the body of a police officer saying, this is my fault, you just missed that? So this guy, so a lot of these people who said, oh, she was saying I did it, she was saying it's my fault, that came a while after the fact. Like, that wasn't something that they reported right away. Now, both officers also testify that nobody came out of that home, which we already knew, Turtle Boy's mentioned several times on this show, nor from any other home on the street. Yannetti, who's another defense attorney who I like based off these transcripts, says, I don't mean to be a wise guy, but did any other house on that street have a dead police officer in the front yard? Officer replies no before the judge struck his question. So this is already, I mean, what are we, day three of this trial? And we're getting a lot of information. And I think it looks really good for Karen Reed. When we come back, we're going to talk to Howie Carr. He's going to give us a little history lesson on agitators versus protesters versus, you know, riots and what it all means. So don't go anywhere.
You're listening to The Grace Curley Show. This is The Grace Curley Show.
And so the request we received in writing could not have been clearer. While those who broke into the building did include students, it was led by individuals who are not affiliated with the university. They needed, the school needed the NYPD's assistance to clear Hamilton Hall and the encampments outside.
Okay, so that is New York City Mayor Eric Adams trying to really blame what's happening in New York City, whether you're talking about the City College, or whether you're talking about NYU or Columbia. He's trying to blame it on agitators, on outside protesters who are hijacking this movement. Now, joining us to give us a little history lesson on how this is not the first time this excuse has been bandied about is Professor Carr. He's from the higher education labor movement. Howie, give us a rundown of the last time you heard this.
Well, it was George Wallace in 65, and I think some other Democrat governors in the South and probably congressmen and senators. They always said, what's causing the problems here in the South isn't our local population. It is them outside agitators coming in. That's what he said, outside agitators. And that's why I'm so amused by it. But, you know, you have these southern politicians 60 years ago or 55 years ago. And now you have the same, now it's northern politicians who are black, by the way. The only thing they have in common is they're both Democrats.
Yeah, and they're trying to excuse these students. And also how this idea of, you know, these are young people, you kind of get this sense that they're not responsible for their actions because they're young kids and they're being radicalized. These are adults.
Yeah, they are adults. But also you look at the thing, the University of South Florida. And did you see those scummy hippies?
Yes.
I mean, they were like, they must have run like on an average of about 30 years old.
Yeah.
And it's like the ones I went through the whole list on over the weekend at Emerson. You had a 57-year-old, a 56-year-old, a lot of 40-year-olds in there. There were some hippies in, some ancient hippies in there.
Yeah, no, definitely. Howie Carr is coming up next. He's got a great show planned for you guys, so don't go anywhere.